Are you the King of the Jews? As Pilate looked upon the man, it's hard to imagine how he might have even asked. The one who stood before him was a man who had been beaten through the long night, cursed and mocked and spat upon. Soon he would have a crown of thorns placed upon his head, and a purple robe upon his shoulders after he had been stripped and scourged, all in mockery. And that is the man that stood before Pilate. He sure didn't look like a king. And so on this feast of Christ the King, we have two important questions placed before us. First of all, how ought we recognize the true King? And secondly, what does that mean for us, for you and me? To the first question, how do we recognize a king, our king? Clearly, it isn't by appearance. It isn't by his clothing, the crown on his head, by his manicure, his haircut. None of these externals reveal to us who this person named Jesus is to us. And it's not based upon simply the testimony of others. It's interesting how Jesus asks him, "Are you saying this on your own, or have others told you about me?" Now, clearly, it is important to hear about Jesus from others. It's practically no other way to come to know him. But there is this point that we cannot escape, where we have to be able to make that leap and say, it's not only what this other person told me, but it's what I have come to know, that this man is my Lord, my King, my God. You know, we hear a lot today about the problem that seems to be about in people within the Catholic Church, that they don't recognize Jesus in the Eucharist, in the Blessed Sacrament of the altar. But it seems, as we consider this problem of people failing to recognize what takes place in the Mass when the bread and the wine become body and blood, this problem has a another problem that comes even prior to that. And that is the answer to another question that is posed, in this case, by Jesus to his disciples. It is, who do they say that I am? And who do you say that I am? If we can't answer that question, then we're not going to have the right answer to what happens here at the altar. If we don't know who he is, then we're not going to recognize him speaking to us in his word, and we're not going to recognize him in the host or the chalice. And so we come to the second question. If we recognize him because of the truth that we've discovered in him, if we recognize him because of the love that he has shown in our life and the mercy that he has offered us in his forgiveness, if we recognize him because we have discovered a power within ourselves once we have acknowledged him that we cannot find in anyone else or anywhere else, if we recognize him, then what does that mean for our lives? What does it mean for my life? In this day, that's also an essential question, because we really don't like to have anybody that has any power over us, anyone that could potentially tell us what to do. We have elevated what we call liberty to such a level, and we've interpreted it to mean that we are the lords of our own lives. That no one can tell me what I am, what I might become. No one may give me a direction for my life, because we've interpreted liberty to mean total autonomy. But that kind of liberty comes up against the claim that Jesus makes when he tells us that he is a king. As T.S. Eliot has put it, if Jesus is indeed the Lord of the universe, the one who has made us, if he is king of our lives, then the cost is not less than everything. He has a claim upon us and a right to what we have. And our liberty then becomes the opportunity to give ourselves in freedom to him and to his direction in our life. Our freedom is to be able to say, I am not my own creator, and my destiny is not of my making either, and I don't, and I'm not the center of truth. You are the one who is. And And so we can acknowledge the words of Paul in his letter to the Corinthians when he says, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price." So glorify God in your body, not just by your words, not even simply by your actions, but glorify God with all you have, with all you are. Don't hold anything back. And if you recognize Him, the incarnate Son of God, as your Lord, then you have to recognize Him also in His distressing disguise in our midst. Mother Teresa taught us that. Recognize Him in people who come to our borders with nothing and no one, nothing but the clothes on their back. No food, no identity, who have fled from life-threatening situations against them and their families, and who have appeared to us, the brothers and sisters of our high and mighty God. And recognize Him in the lady that I met last night in the parking lot here. As I walked late at night, I heard her crying, moaning, collapsed on the ground. I went up and asked her if she was okay. Of course, I knew the answer to that. She said to me, "I'm okay. I've had a bad day." I said, "Do you have some place to go?" She said, "There's a shelter." She's just trying to get the strength to go there. If you're a person who acknowledges Jesus as your King, then recognize Him in her. Recognize Him in your family member who's going through trials right now. Recognize Him loving you when you're so disappointed in yourself, and give yourself once more to Him. I'll just close with this passage from Romans. "I beseech you, brothers and sisters, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind."